This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello and welcome to John Richardson and the Futurenauts Christmas Special 2022. It's the optimism special. I'm only going to be optimistic and say nice things. So, a wonderful, festive, heartfelt welcome to the most wonderful of people. It's Ed Gillespie and Mark Stevenson. Hello.
Hello.
I'm suspicious already.
I'm doing my best, mate.
Can't last. It can't last. And if it does last, it'll ruin my year.
I've got a rictus grin on. I'm not very well, but illness is just nature's way of making you appreciate wellness, right, guys?
Yeah. So Mark went into sort of, you know, supervillain mode when he was ill. You become like overbearingly cheesy.
Just makes me appreciate all the times I don't feel like shit. And it makes me appreciate shit. Where would we be without shit?
You know what? I was in bed last time we did this podcast, and I am in bed again because I'm iller still.
So you're not going to be positive?
I'll try. Come on, it's Christmas.
Are you excited about Christmas?
Oh, that's such a good question. Yes, I am excited about having some time off.
Do you know what? Once you've paused for that long, I think I've got my answer. Scrooge doesn't pause for that long at the end, does he? Well, do you know what? On balance, they've done it in one night. So in fairness, fine. Let's get around Bob Cratchit's house and I'll ameliorate his contract by 2.5%.
Do you want to know what the pause was for?
Yes.
Okay. What we did there? You referenced the pause by pausing. It's a metapause.
Old John would have said no, he didn't for shits and giggles, but a new optimistic John is delighted to hear what you have to say, Mark.
It's because me and my beloved this year have definitely agreed not to buy each other any presents, because I just said to her, look, I don't want you to express your love for me by buying me something I don't need and feeding this ridiculous commercial orgy that is part of the problem that the world is so fucked up. And everywhere I look now, I just see Christmas stuff, people buying stuff they don't need to express love that they already feel, to feed profits that destroyed the planet that we're supposed to be celebrating at Christmas time. Happy fucking tidings.
Something reassuring and easy about a gift, though, isn't it? If someone says, don't show me your love with a gift, what they mean is show me it in different ways. And that's an eggier path, isn't it? What you're supposed to do, be nice to each other, hug each other, tell each other you love each other.
That's what you're doing now, isn't it? That's what you're going for this episode.
Yes, I love everyone.
See?
And you're not getting a present. Ed, are you excited about Christmas?
I am. I'm even fully dressed this week. I didn't reveal last week. I did the whole podcast whilst wearing my unicorn onesie.
Aww.
And I wasn't even in bed. But yeah, now, of course, it's hard not to be excited about Christmas when you've got a five-year-old in the house, as I'm sure we're all fully aware. Claire Faye was just tucking into bed and she was like saying, how many sleeps till Christmas, Daddy? But no, I totally concur with what Mark's saying. And I'm making most of my presents this year.
Great.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be palming off the cider that I made.
That's not a gift for anyone but yourself. Oh, sorry, you hadn't finished the sentence.
I got 75 litres of it to share with folk. And my...
Wait, sorry, are we talking about the cider or what you're palming off?
Yeah, I just heard palming off and thought, that's it, I don't want that in the post.
My slow gin and my slow rum. I've made gingerbread. I'm going to make some chocolate truffles. So yeah, I'm doing all things that you could put in your mouth, made by my hands.
You're really testing me, aren't you? Testing my optimism. It will not slip. Of course, you have two Ukrainian visitors as well with you. Will you be having a Ukrainian Christmas?
We've been having a bit of a discussion about that, actually, because Traditionally, they used to celebrate it on the 7th of January. So because they were kind of aligned with the Gregorian calendar. But I think because that was also a sort of partly a Russian associated holiday, apparently the Ukrainians are now moving back to celebrate on the Julian calendar like the rest of us. But for them, Christmas Eve is, I think, is the big one. And they do a kind of traditional family gathering where they have 12 dishes. And you'll like this, John, because one or two of the dishes do have fish in, but the traditionally it's all vegan.
Excellent.
They have a big sort of vegan Christmas Eve feast, which is amazing because I have to say my Ukrainian guests do seem to eat a lot of meat.
Do you know what I'm going to do at Christmas lunch?
I mean, given your mood at the moment, shit on the table and storm out to the pub?
No, I think, so for my 50th birthday, John, you very generously bought me a bottle of wine that was 50 years old.
I did.
And we did say we were all going to drink it together, the four of us.
I know, he didn't buy me one on my 50th.
No, and I think we can read a lot into that, but let's not do that on the podcast, shall we?
I was told not to buy individual gifts for you. I was told to chip into a pooled fund.
I'm only teasing, John, and I know you did.
Well, I did buy you one and just drank it because Mark hasn't drank it. So I'm sick of sending wine to people.
Yeah, and we haven't managed to get around to being in the same room together, so I thought it was sitting there. So I might open it for Christmas lunch.
Oh, that would be lovely. I would be honoured. Send us a picture of it. That's the same as drinking it together, isn't it?
Not really, no.
No. So intriguingly, Ed, you want to talk about AI today.
Well, I wouldn't say I wanted to, but we were trying to be topical, weren't we, in this kind of series. So,
oh, yeah.
And it feels like it's quite topical because my social media feeds.
I've got it. I know what we're going to do. Right, we're going to do AI, which is like the Three Ghosts of Christmas. This is a bad Christmas future, dystopian AI. And then we've got the Fusion announcement. That's good Christmas future. And then we can have sort of May Christmas future.
Well, let's say Fusion then. If future is a positive Christmas future, let's save that till the end and let's have current Christmas future. What's AI? Is that AI's? Oh, I see what you did. They're all futures, aren't they?
Yeah.
All right then. Well, let's save Fusion till the end then. Because if it is genuinely positive, the thing I read said that it's not going to be positive for ages though. But that's still positive, right?
It's not that positive, obviously, because you're on the show.
Doing my best.
Yeah, it's not great.
No, it's just not my natural voice.
it sounds like an AI version of John. It's like we've programmed ChatGPT to be John Richardson, except we've accidentally fed in a Joe Pasquale reel, and so he's just got this incredible positivity.
This is the man that Lucy thinks she wants to be married to. I need you both to email her and say that you've met him and he's a prick.
Joe Pasquale.
Joe Pasquale's ripped these days. I don't know if you've seen that. Joe Pasquale's gym bod.
Right. It sounds like you fancy him. Sounds like you want to be married to Joe Pasquale.
I loved Joe Pasquale. He was on Meet the Richardsons. He's got a lovely body. He was very kind. And he's moving to Whitby and he writes horror stories now. What a life, eh?
Wow. Because isn't that where Bram Stoker wrote Dracula?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He wants to be in the gothic vibe.
Wow, the gothic vibe of Whitby. I've never been to Whitby.
Been to Whitby? Yeah, you've got to go to Whitby, mate. So you've never been to Robin Hood's Bay either, I guess.
No.
Right, Future Noughts Live 2023, live from Whitby.
Let's do it. I'm up
Absolutely.
For it.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's have it. That'll be a wonderful day out. It's a lovely place, Whitby.
If there's anybody in Whitby listening who knows if there's a local arts centre where that we can go, then let's do it.
There's a theatre in Whitby.
Do it. Let's do it. Let's do Future Noughts Live in Whitby.
All right, then. And if you want to get a little taste of what Whitby's like, Ed, may I recommend the Meet the Richardsons Holiday Special, Part 1, which is filmed in Whitby. Yeah.
Lovely. I did work with a guy from Whitby when I lived up in Orkney many moons ago, a guy called Mike, who we used to go fishing together. And he used to keep his fish for a few days after he'd caught it because he goes, I prefer it when it's a bit rifty.
And I was rifty. Like,
rifty.
Oh.
He liked his fish a bit rifty.
Will Mike be coming to the live show?
with a fish?
Yeah, a few day old fish. Historically not the sort of thing you want to leave for a bit. So let's get the depressing future out of the way and let's talk
about... Hang on. We haven't done what we're drinking.
Oh, yeah. Are you having a drink, even though you're poorly?
I forced myself because you said we had to, John.
Yeah, well, don't let the listener know the stipulations I put people through to work with me. I will work with you, but I need a blood alcohol content of at least 10%. Well, what are you drinking then, gentlemen?
I'm drinking an organic Spanish red wine. It's quite nice, actually. It feels like just sort of wine you should drink when you've got a flu. It's very warming and calming of the throat.
as prescribed by the GP. He goes, I think you should drink an organic Rioja in order to deal with your symptoms, Mr. Stevenson.
Yeah, it's sort of like Benelin Malbec blend.
Cal Policella. Ed, are you having a drink?
Yes, I've got a Portuguese red, so I've gone over the border.
Well, I see your wine, and I'll raise you about 25%, and I'm drinking an American whiskey called Crown Royal, which is what I drank when I was in Louisiana with Sean Locke, and Christmas makes me a little bit backward thinking, sometimes a little bit emotional. So I thought I'd celebrate the good time we had when we were cowboys in Louisiana and we sat out on the steps of a ranch and drank a bottle between us of a night time. And the next morning I got up early with a hangover and had a piece of toast and I saw a hummingbird. And it was a good time.
Oh, that's a beautiful image.
I'm just pouring a glass and then raising it to Sean Locke.
Yes, indeed. Sean Locke and absent friends.
Yeah, well, as you're saying that, there's actually a butterfly flying around in my room, and they always say that butterfly is a symbol of a lost soul.
Oh, there you go.
Don't tell me Sherlock has come back as a butterfly.
In my kitchen.
I know many things about my time with Sean. I didn't see him coming back as a butterfly in the Norfolk area, but I'm pleased. Right, I'm determined to talk about AI, even if you're not.
There's a way to test whether that is Sean Locke, you know, don't you? Put a carrot in a box and see. Yeah.
I get so many carrots gifted to me now. I mean, it's lovely to be remembered for anything. Of course it is. But it'd be nice to be remembered for one of my tours or a joke I'd written. But sadly, I'm going to be remembered for not being able to tell whether there's a carrot in a closed box or not.
Schrodinger's carrot.
Schrodinger, yeah. I'll give it a sort of scientific bent. In many ways, until the box was opened, there was a carrot in that box, right, guys?
Yeah. You realise every time you try and ask about AI, Mark is going to interrupt. and we're not going to get onto it.
No, I can talk about AI. I've written about AI for years. I have very strong and interesting views developed.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right, then. Let's have one of them.
What do you want to know?
I'm unfamiliar with this sort of interview process where you both have opinions that are informed and you broadly probably agree with each other and you try and inform. I'm more of a GMB news kind of guy, so it would help me if one of you was for it and one of you was against it.
All right.
Well, okay, let's take it at the facile level and then Mark can give a kind of an intellectual and more nuanced perspective. But I mean, people can't have missed the fact that everyone's been sharing their Lenser images. People have stuffed a few selfies into the program and been sent back a whole range of images of themselves looking sexier, more attractive, thinner, younger. I can't think why people feel the need to share all these beautiful images of themselves, which are better than life. It flushes out every narcissist in your friendship group. You go, oh, wow. Like, and people are doing the sort of humble brag going, oh, I just thought I'd jump on this trend in order to share these amazing pictures of me. But I mean, I guess the dark side of it is the fact that the AI has quite happily screened through all the work of millions of artists all over the world without sort of credit. And it is a crude form of mass appropriation in order to produce those images. So it's a bit twisted. And I was talking to a friend of mine, James, who has a brain the size of a planet and actually works a lot in data and AI. And he was pointing out that some of the kind of hilarious mistakes that are still being made because AI is not working on a kind of ladder of intelligence type of model. It's not a single integrated intelligence. It's a lot of sort of cobbled together intelligences, which it's bringing together from the stuff that it's absorbed. The examples you see of images generated with multiple fingers, like AI seems to have a problem remembering that human beings only have four fingers. So you can throw an instruction into Midjourney, and for some reason the people will have five or six fingers. And there's a great meme that's been going around with people saying, AI is going to be the future, and AI agreeing the contract, and the handshakes have all got about seven fingers on each hand.
So, I mean, the other thing that everybody's talking about is ChatGPT, which is this natural language processing thing that seems to be able to have kind of fairly intelligent conversations with you, but again, still makes interesting mistakes. But I think the problem is always this central narrative where people are worried that these machines are going to become cleverer than humans. And they're certainly better in some ways at doing some things than humans. But the thing is, neither of those machines has an opinion. It doesn't have a consciousness. It doesn't know whether what it's doing is good or bad. And it can't abstract beyond that. So they're really not intelligent in any useful sense because they're not conscious. And it's consciousness that actually is the mainstay of the kind of creative intelligence that solves kind of difficult problems that we have. So what you want is to sort of marry the best of, you know, Ed Gillespie with a machine. So Ed Gillespie with an AI works better than Ed Gillespie without an AI. But the idea that, you know, AI is suddenly going to start taking over the world is kind of ridiculous, because the very thing that makes the human world human is the human creativity. So there's a lot of science fiction schlock going around about how this stuff is all going to overtake us. It is incredibly, incredibly powerful in the same way that AK-47 is powerful and can do damaging things. But really, it's who wields it and which direction they point it that really matters. And that's the nuance, really. It's the artificial generalized intelligence, which is this kind of superhuman conscious-like machine, just doesn't exist. And nobody knows how to build it because we don't know what consciousness is.
Is some of the fear simply the sort of speed of advance of it? I think because the last few years we've been talking about sort of quite singular issues, we haven't really seen an evolution. And it feels like this last few weeks of talking about AI has just been someone saying, have you seen all the stuff it can do now? And that naturally breeds an air of, oh shit, well, what's it going to be able to do next year then?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, am I supposed to be worried about AI replacing me as a comedian?
I think there are certain comedians who could be replaced by an AI, and you may be one of them, but I don't think they're really, I don't think they're really great comedians, but anything to worry about.
We're not getting any closer to the sort of revelatory, what's that bloody film that goes on for ages, the Christmas film?
It's a Wonderful Life.
That's it. I'm wondering at one point whether it's going to be on this call that Mark Stevenson reaches his epiphany.
It's AI Wonderful Life.
Oh, that's very nice. Given that you're saying that it's not going to replace creativity because it can't, because it doesn't know what it is, what is the reason to be fearful of AI?
I think the reason to be fearful of AI is who's using it for what. And if you get it to start making decisions that are not moral or conscious, so for instance, the idea of AI-controlled weapons. And indeed, there's lots of, you know, I mean, I think it's just misnamed. You shouldn't call it artificial intelligence. You should call it machine learning or intelligence mimicry, because it's not genuinely intelligent in the way that we would think the word intelligence. And that is the danger of it. So, for instance, you get racist AIs because they've, you know, scanned the internet for data in various forms, whether that's images or text, and they've inherited the bias of racism that's embedded in so much of the world. And so if it was truly intelligent, it would go, what's this racist shit? But it's not. So really, it's not artificial intelligence. It's kind of also artificial stupidity. And it's what we do with it that matters. And that's why we have to have a very serious debate about how we use it, as we would with a weapon, as we would with a medicine or whatever. And I think the ethics around AI are not very well regulated and are a bit loose. But it's a wonderful place to go and have an intellectual debate, but nobody's really sort of applying much legislation into that area, and especially because legislators don't understand it and, in fact, are a little bit scared of it.
Yeah, I think there's a massive risk of tidal waves of misinformation, or indeed alluding to Mark's sort of point about who's using it, or indeed active disinformation. You know, so being able to flood the internet with content in the same way that chatbots do to a certain extent now, but with whole articles of plausible sounding bullshit, which, you know, unless you're an expert, you wouldn't be able to unpick.
I mean, to be honest, though,
that's already happening.
The Daily Mail, which is just, you know, a whole newspaper of plausible bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Don't come and pollute our pristine and pure, intellectually rigorous internet with your AI disinformation. So actually, human beings are doing a really good job of filling that with shit themselves.
There we go. We've ended on an optimistic note, haven't we? Not going to be any worse, is it?
Look, if you go back to the invention of the novel, people were saying that these novels are a terrible idea because these are imaginary worlds and people get completely lost in them and they will lose all moral fiber if they start listening to fiction or reading fiction. And the same happened with radio and the same with TV. And AI is another medium in which our descendants will swim, but they will understand what it is and what it isn't. And they will also understand that they won't live in a world where they look at the media and go, well, this is somebody trying to tell me the truth. They'll understand that it is a different beast. And they'll create their own methods for finding the truth that aren't necessarily our current news media. And that might actually end up being a good thing.
That was nice, wasn't it? We can do it, can't we? I liked it. Here's an easier one. Paul de Buitlayer. Don't know if I've said that right. Is tea overrated?
Is this a listener's question?
It is, yeah. It's coming via Twitter. Well, it might be an AI, we don't know. From Dublin, a senior XD at Sage. So I think that's a real person. Would an AI pretend to be that?
Does he mean tea, the late afternoon meal, or tea as in the hot beverage? And in which case, like a caffeinated black tea, a green tea, a herbal tea? There's so many nuances here.
I think Paul might be Portuguese. There's some Portuguese. Aquele jogador que milita muito, o militao. That's got a like. So I don't know what I've just said, but somebody agreed with it, so it must be all right.
Okay.
I'm going to speculate that if Paul is originally either Portuguese or Brazilian, I don't think they mean tea as in what you're having for your tea. I think they mean tea, the hot brewed beverage. But I tell you what, if you've got strong opinions on tea as a meal, it's the Christmas special. Do you know what? Fucking let rip.
It's an underdeveloped question, isn't it? Really?
Oh, here we go. Just a bit of fun, mate.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mark's in a very philosophical mood this evening.
Well, it's, I mean, you know.
Do you like tea?
It depends. Depends, doesn't it? It depends on the context. It depends on what kind of tea it is. It depends on how it's been made. I mean, you know, you can have exactly the same drink, some of it made by slaves and some of it, you know, squeezed from the tears of angels. So, you know, which tea are we talking about? Taste-wise, of course it's not overrated. Tea is literally the solver of all problems in every British household for the last 300 years. Come down, have a cup of tea, let's talk about it. Fish and chips, cup of tea. Got a biscuit? Cup of tea. Got an argument? Cup of tea. Feeling sad? Cup of tea. Need to talk to a friend about something difficult? Cup of tea. Need to fire somebody? Have a cup of tea. Of course tea's not overrated. Tea is the very lubricant of the world in which we live. It is the smoothing of all the difficult moments by the simple act of a liquid beverage that makes everything just feel a little bit warmer and nicer just for a moment. Set you alive within the taste buds of the universe, tingling upon your warm, moist tongue of expectation.
Who got there in the end, didn't we? He's talked himself round on AI and he's talked himself on tea. What we've learned, Ed, is if we just leave him long enough, he sort of talks himself into a vague state of optimism. He's gone from, what do you mean it's a shit question, to a long speech about how tea is the only reason society has stayed together. I think it is overrated. I think it's shitter than coffee and it's shitter than beer. All the things you said, oh, do you need to sack someone? Have a pint. Need to have an argument, have a pint.
It's true. Maybe there's a hierarchy of liquid social lubricants that, you know, based on personal preference and taste or cultural context. But, I mean, tea works. Coffee wouldn't, though, because coffee would make you a bit more aggy, wouldn't it?
You can't have a pint at 11 a.m. in the morning.
Have you ever been in an airport?
Oh, yeah, it's late in an airport, 11, isn't it?
I'm going to say, well, doesn't Wetherspoons open at about 10 o'clock in the morning? Any people and have their fried breakfast and a pint. I've seen it.
Reference Sean Locke's wonderful routine about brunch there, where the spoon's serving brunch to basically hoover up alcoholics and make them feel like they're having a meal. It was only a bit of bloody brunch. It's a wonderful routine. So, big news, since we are reacting and up to date, we referenced it earlier, exciting developments in the world of nuclear fusion this week. Mm. Some people say, oh, brilliant, that's that sorted then. And some people say it's not going to be sorted for ages, so we've still got all the problems we had anyway, because we'll have worked out whether we're going to save the planet or not by then, by the time that this becomes an option. What say you, gentlemen?
Well,
still a way off.
It's a long way off. I think it is an incredibly important watershed moment because the reaction itself created more energy than was put into the reaction. But however, it did not create more energy than was needed to create the experiment. So the amount of energy that was delivered by the lasers into the little hydrogen bubble was less than what came out of the reaction, but the energy needed to power up those lasers was more than you got out of it. So we're still some way off. However, it is very significant because it now proves that we can do nuclear fusion and get more energy out than we got in. However, to make those machines at scale, to get them to the point where they can attach to the grid, to do all the necessary legislation, health and safety stuff, we are still 20, 30, 40 years off that being a thing. If it happens, it is potentially game-changing. However, the other problem with these kinds of energy projects is that they rely on vast amounts of infrastructure, which means they are then generally controlled by nation states or big corporations. Whereas what I like about renewables is they can be distributed. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I think, you know, anything that gets us to a low carbon economy and can keep us there and can provide cheap, abundant energy is a wonderful, wonderful thing, because everything is basically a function of the cost of energy. If you want to, you know, reduce the cost of healthcare, education, social cohesion, whatever, reduce the cost of energy. So fusion potentially could be that silver bullet, but we're about 40 years off, but I don't like the fact that it will still be probably centrally controlled.
All I took from that is that it's going to be 40 years away and I'll be 80 by then. So I probably don't need to give a shit, do I?
No, in terms of, I mean, this is the thing, in terms of timescales, if you think like by 2050, we're supposed to be at net zero, all of the big challenges we have on energy and climate change will have to be resolved in some way, shape or form before we're going to be anywhere near bringing fusion online. And it is a breakthrough, but it's always been a movable feast. I mean, I've been talking about fusion as a potential energy source my entire career, or mentioning it. I remember actually when I did my trip around the world, I traveled in Mongolia with two nuclear fusion scientists and spent a lot of time bouncing around in the back of a minibus across the Gobi Desert discussing the pros and cons of fusion. And their kind of attitude to it even then was, we probably won't see it come to maturity during our careers. This was 15 years ago. So, yes, it's an interesting moment, but don't hold your breath, people.
But I think we have to also put into context that actually the results of that experiment will be looked back on maybe after our lifetimes as an absolutely extraordinary moment, akin to discovering the photovoltaic effect or solving Fermat's last theorem. You know, it's just an extraordinary moment, because it's the moment where everything we thought might be possible suddenly actually does become possible.
He's done it again, you know. You leave him long enough, you get sentences like, the moment at which everything we thought possible has become possible.
So Mark's gone all Carl Sagan on us.
I have got to tell you, the second album of Quantum Pig is largely influenced by Mr. Sagan.
And is it the moment at which everything you thought was possible has become possible?
No, that's prog rock. That's definitely a retrospective-looking art form, not a forward-thinking one.
So that's the moment at which everything that you thought was possible back then?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Although, you know, as a prog rock band, we are pushing the boundaries of what is acceptable. We played pop songs on our last tour and got away with it.
What did you play?
Okay, pop songs.
Which ones?
The Birdie song.
Ones we'd written. Ones you've never heard of.
Oh, I thought you meant you were doing covers.
No. You would never do that in front of a prog audience. That's suicide. No, I've written a pop song. It's, you know, all about how beautiful the world is. And I sang it in front of them for 3.5 minutes of pure pop, and I got away with it.
Must have written that a few years ago.
No, I wrote it last year.
Did you? Oh, you were in a good mood last year, were you?
Well, not
we
really.
Should have done a podcast that week.
What's all this? I am generally. Am I the miserable one? Am I?
No, you keep saying you're the miserable one, but then I think you're not. What's happening here is that you keep saying you're miserable and actually being the most optimistic one here. And I've come into it pretending to be an optimist, but cut underneath everything I'm saying is a sort of defeatist death wish tendency, which I think people are picking up on. Leaves Ed in the middle.
Yeah, Mark's inverting the kind of, you know, give him enough rope and he'll hang himself. And like, give him enough elastic and time and he'll twang himself into a better future.
Absolutely. And the final thing it says that we're going to talk about is modern slavery. That's a bit of fun, isn't it? You know, knowing you guys, this is where, you know, slavery goes full circle and becomes a good thing then. Is that what modern slavery is? Like, you know, 21st century good slavery?
Well, it's the definition of modern slavery is essentially, you know, exploiting people for personal commercial gain. It's quite a broad brush, but actually, weirdly, it probably has some kind of AI connection there as well. You know, if you're having your art hijacked into an AI program, then, you know, could argue that you're being exploited for commercial gain by that particular system. Now, it just made me laugh this week because my old agency was running a series of webinars under the headline Adventures in the Anthropocene. And the first one was on modern slavery. But it turns out that Adventures in the Anthropocene is actually the title of a very well-known environmental book by the author Gaia Vince, who wasn't very happy when she discovered that her book title had been hijacked for the title of the series, which was essentially modern slavery, because it was being used by them for personal or commercial gain. So it was irony on a base level, but I liked it. Has anyone ever stolen anything off you, John? Have you ever had a joke nicked? Or
no, well, that's the great thing about my work is it's basically unstealable. I mean, I shouldn't be doing it, really. So why anyone else would want it?
It's unnickable.
if I see AI doing routines about how another AI has not stacked the dishwasher properly, then I know that something's afoot. But luckily, until then, I remain absolutely unplagiarizable by not having anything remotely rememberable.
That was a great gig. What do you remember the best bit? No, I can't.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a bit of a blur.
Yeah, what was the gig? Oh, I was on time and it finished when I expected it to. So there you go. Can't complain, can you? More of that coming next year.
It is true, though. It's very hard to remember anything on a stand-up gig. Like when you go to see a comedian, it's almost impossible to remember any of the things when you come afterwards. So, and I don't know why, it's very hard to remember jokes. Have you ever been that moment where somebody has been to see a comedian and they're around the dinner table and they go, and then he said, and there was a bit with a penguin, and then they're laughing, but it's just like they've totally ruined it.
But you're doomed either way then, because even if they do remember it, it's never going to be as good, is it? It's like trying to describe a film to someone. And then the building blew up and they all, yeah, I'll probably go and watch it, mate, if that's all right with you. Sounds like a visual medium. So next time we talk, it'll be 2023, will it?
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, well, fingers crossed. Might not. This might be the last one.
Well, yeah, okay.
Is that optimism?
Well, wind it up on the fifth episode.
Well, something might happen. You know, the world might blow up. Or, you know, those things that I've done might finally come to fruition.
We literally on this show promised to do a live Future Noughts gig in Whitby.
Oh, we have.
2023 must go on for that reason, if nothing else.
January the 1st, 1 minute past midnight.
Going out with a bang and a rifty fish.
Talk to me about 2023 then. How are you both feeling?
2023? I haven't actually got round to thinking about that yet, which as a futurist is probably slightly embarrassing. But I think once you turn 50 as well, the turning of the year becomes a sort of slightly sharper thing. You know, we were joking about the kind of 2,500 weeks into your 4,000 weeks, weren't we, in I think episode 2. And yeah, I don't know. I was looking at one of the old boys on the allotment outside the back of my house, and he must be in his 80s. And I was trying to imagine what it must be like to be tending your allotment and wondering whether that's your last season.
Happy Christmas.
Well, no, but I meant it in a positive way, because there was some...
You can't say that. That'll be the last leak I ever fucking pick. How is that remotely optimistic?
There's something beautiful about still plugging away at it, whether not knowing whether you would get to eat that leek.
Anyway. Nice. Did you go down there and say that to him? I wouldn't bother with them courgettes, mate.
Courgettes are long gone, John.
I was trying. What's going in now then for next season?
Well, nothing's going at the moment because the ground's like iron.
So, Mark, have you got anything more optimistic than the complete futility of growing vegetables because we'll all be dead soon? what an answer to, are you looking forward to 2023?
I'm sorry.
I liked it. Don't get me wrong. Like, bang on message that. I'll sell that spade, mate.
Ed is just turned into a Pink Floyd lyric. You know that song, Time? They go, you run and you run to catch up with the sun, but it's sinking, rushing around to come up behind you again.
Yeah.
You're one day older and one day closer to death. You know, but it's basically like, what? Why even think about the future? It's all just, you know, one step closer to the inevitable demise of everything you love and care about.
I had to drag my speakers out and just play that on a loop over the allotment.
So I have to question now, is it current events that have meant that two people whose job is to sort of delve into the future and find fruit within it that has made you two as depressed as you are? Or is it me? I think it might be me.
Do you know what I think it is, John? I'll tell you what it is, because you asked me what I was thinking about when I think about 2023. I think the year I'm going into and the next 10 years are kind of the real years where the rubber hits the road on change and the shift and the difficult periods that the world's going to have to go through to have any chance of surviving. You know, we've been going on about this stuff, but it's really now it's
shit or bust.
It's more of a contact sport than it's ever been. And in a way that's incredibly optimistic. You know, the carbon removal stuff that I'm doing, I'm really excited about, But I wish that we didn't have to remove the carbon in the first place. I wish it wasn't up there because, you know, so we're in a mess. And I kind of think it's like, to use a footballing analogy, it's probably like, you know, you're going in as the underdog and you're up against Argentina and you've got to win. And that's how the world feels at the moment. Like, yeah, okay, bring it on, bring the game on. I've worked all my life for this. I'm going to give it my best, but I know it's going to be hard. And so it's trying to find the balance between doing the work and staying positive. And staying positive because you're doing the work. But it really is, the next 10 years are exactly where the rubber hits the road on everything, not just climate change, social justice, inequality, all those things. And the old world has to die and a new one has to be born. And as we know, every birth can be joyous, but it's also a painful rite of passage for the people doing it. And that's where we're at. So I look at 2023 with a sense of, okay, game on, but also a sense of, am I ready for this? Am I big enough for this? Because I'm at, you know, my 50s is probably the next 10 years, probably the most productive of my professional career, where I've probably got the most agency and power. Am I going to use that to my maximum ability for the benefit of my children and everybody else's? And what will it look like 10 years from now? And I don't know, but I know I'm going to go for it. And I hope at the end of it, I'll be able to sit down with you guys and drink a glass of wine. So it's kind of like huge kind of girding of the loins and kind of optimism about what could be achieved, but also no shying away from the fact that it's going to be a very difficult decade.
Just in terms of scheduling that glass of wine, did you mean that in terms of the next decade? So am I penciling that in for 2033, or is that at the end of next year, or is that at the start of next year?
I would always drink a glass of wine with you, John Richardson, at any time.
All right. See you in Whitby.
Yes.
Well, good luck, everyone, with your Christmases and your New Years. And thank you.
We haven't done anything festive that we haven't talked about.
We have. We've told people there's no point planting vegetables because you're all going to die. There's be nothing more festive than that.
Wow. What about you, John? What do you think about 2023?
Oh, I'm all right, mate. Don't you worry about me. I've got a new panel show coming out. I've done my bit. I've done a few series of this. And that's me done. So good luck to you, lads, with your environmentalism and your carbon capture. I've got a new panel show coming out about couples, and I'm just going to fall into a pit of absolute self-involvement, and I'm gonna be the person who questions everything. We say, but is it climate change? I'm going to have a go at that because I've tried the other thing, so I think it's only fair to have a go at that. But is it though? But can we afford to pay nurses? Think about that. Who's going to pay for that?
Is this actual couples, or could you have me and Ed on as a couple?
It depends how far you're willing to go to get on the show. It is actual couples, but I'm not ruling out you two becoming one. No, we have to get a second series first because we filmed the first one. So you've got a year to really get into it.
You'll find me on the allotment, but you have to be quick.
Absolutely.
There's no point trying to get Ed on the show because he'll be dead quite soon. by his own analysis. No, he'll just
it wasn't Ed that was going to die. That's what I liked about it. It was a very specific old man on his allotment. That's why I enjoyed the image so much. He was just watching a man tend to his vegetables, tutting away at yourself. What a waste of his fucking time.
You know what? He's gonna look out onto that allotment in a few days' time. And that man is going to be tapping his earphones. And he's going, I'm just listening to this podcast.
Yeah. Oh, what's a prog rock Christmas classic, Mark? Get us back onto a festive theme quickly.
Well, I think the most proggy of carols is probably Carol of the Bells, which is really quite proggy. It's not; it's kind of out there in a musical way, and it's rather beautiful.
So it sounds like a barmaid from a pub.
Which one's Carol of the Bells? Is that the one that goes?
Yeah, that one.
Is that prog then?
Let's talk.
I like that one. I didn't know I was into prog. Maybe it's on Home Alone.
You are into prog. Everybody comes to prog in the end. The whole of the Richardsons has a prog soundtrack. How can you not be? You know it.
Yeah, I googled Jethro Tull this week and I didn't know they were formed in Blackpool. That's a little fact I learned.
Absolute. They're prog rock royalty and your whole show is soundtracked by them. This show is soundtracked by Quantum Pig. You are already progged. You don't know it.
Oh, God, am I furthering prog?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Ask me again about 2023.
How do you feel about 2023?
I'm going to make some changes.
Well, the thing is, that's quite prog too, because there's a lot of changes in prog, you know.
Oh, God.
And time signatures changes.
All right, then I'm going to keep everything the same.
Mm. Well, that's also quite prog as well.
Oh, God. What's not prog?
What's not prog?
Ending something prematurely. Right. See you later, everyone. See you next year.